Chris Enns, host of Show Me Your Mic and the owner of SSKTN. And I think it's important to acknowledge milestones in the projects I do. And while 30 episodes isn't a huge number, it's still a lot more than I thought I'd get to with this show when I started it. I figured I would probably do 4 or 5 interviews with some podcasters I knew, and then it would fizzle out as people stopped replying to my emails and blocking me on Twitter to stop getting requests. But it didn't fizzle out. The response has been tremendous. Well, tremendous relative to most other podcasts I've done. Hundreds of downloads instead of tens of downloads. Real people tuning into a live stream instead of just me on the other computer testing it. So I wanted to mark this, the 30th episode, the diamond episode, if you will, if we were married, by saying thank you to all the listeners of Show Me Your Mic. Thanks for tuning in each week when I've recorded live, for downloading the shows, leaving a rating or review in iTunes, and spreading the word about the show on the internet. As I record this right now, I'm getting ready to head down to San Francisco, where I'll be for a few days. And it just so happened to work out that I could record my first live in-person interview for Show Me Your Mic with Jason Snell of Macworld and the Incomparable podcast at the Macworld offices in San Francisco. So assuming it all goes well and I'm able to find my way down there, here's my conversation with Jason Snell for this, the 30th episode of Show Me Your Mic.
You're listening to Show Me Your Mic, a show that interviews other podcasters about their workflows, gear, and thoughts on podcasting. Your host is Chris Enns, a podcaster who's hoping to learn more about the craft by talking to fellow broadcasters.
All right. Hello. Welcome to episode 30 of Show Me Your Mic. This is a very, very special, very special episode in that, well, 30 isn't like the, it's not the most special number in the world, but it's a milestone. And then on top of that, I happen to also be in San Francisco, and which is unique in itself. But then on top of that as well, I happen to be at Macworld's offices, the world headquarters, as it were.
Sure.
Sure. Along with the voice of Jason Snell. Well, the body,
whole,
too.
Yes. All of me is here.
And so having a wonderful time in San Francisco, and now trying to get my head around being in podcast back home in my basement mode while in San Francisco. Anyways,
we're in a windowless room in San Francisco instead.
I know. It's kind of funny, actually. This is less scenic, less picturesque than my own little... I mean, I just look out in my backyard.
But, oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it has a window.
Yes. We have a little padded room. If you go crazy, you can just bump into the walls.
I'm thinking this worked well when Merlin and Dan were here anyway.
Yeah.
And it's also the first time I'm doing, there was a podcast I did with my wife where we talked about Survivor. And so then we were actually in the same room together. But other than that.
Yeah. Podcasting's a lonely art most of the time, right? You end up with just a bunch of different people on Skype. But we are actually across the table from one another. A real table, not a virtual Skype table.
A virtual Skype, yeah. Yeah. And so one of the big reasons why I'm having you on this show, besides the opportunity to come and geek out at the Macworld offices, is because you do a podcast, The Incomparable, and as well as other podcasting related duties.
Yeah, I'm on lots of podcasts now. Sometimes on Macworld, and then we have a tech guide podcast called Clockwise, and then there's The Incomparable, which I do in my spare time. So yeah, lots of podcasting.
Right. Yeah, the Clockwise one, which I actually haven't even had my podcasting listening cues.
Yeah, so there's too many podcasts.
I'm about 100 episodes behind on The Incomparable, and then never mind.
Oh, yeah.
Everything
Number
else.
53 was great.
Exactly.
Get ready for it.
So, and the show itself, the sort of premise or the idea of the show, it was episode 50, I think, where you sort of did a description of why you're doing the show, or maybe it was episode 100.
100 was right. was the ultimate kind of meta episode about why we do it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's why I was listening to it on the plane and sort of then sometimes dozed out, I think.
Right. That was your homework.
Yes.
I remember that. I saw your tweet about that.
Yeah. Listening on the plane. No. And, a sort of book club for book, movie, nerd club, as it were, for a podcast.
Sure. Yeah. We talk about the works. I was on another podcast last night, and they were asking me about that. And I'd say it's a geek culture podcast. And I said, yeah. But what it is, is it's trying to talk about the works themselves. So we'll talk about a book, or we'll talk about a couple books, or we'll talk about a movie or a comic or a TV show or some other things like that. But mostly it's about the actual stuff. We don't really talk a lot about like the news or the people who are involved or fandom as a concept. It's not ever really about that stuff. It's really about the stuff we like usually. Sometimes we don't like it, but mostly the stuff we like and why we like it and what, you know, what's good about it and what's bad about it and have a little bit of a critical eye toward it. And then, that's basically it. So we'll, you know, we did an episode about Star Trek Into Darkness. We did an episode about Iron Man 3. We did an episode about Man of Steel. But we also did, you know, we've done Game of Thrones and a bunch of sci-fi novels of various kinds and Hawkeye and Saga in the comic book club and mm-hmm. all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah, you happen to list off a few of the episodes that I – there's the Iron Man 3, which I haven't seen yet, as you know, or you – maybe used to know when you have younger kids, you don't get to see movies as quickly.
I do know that. It's only this year that we've really actually been able to see modern, like, wow. current releases.
So when do I have to wait till? My kids are six. My oldest is six right now.
Well, my daughter's 11 and my son's nine, just turned nine. And it was only, you know, so he's sort of the defining factor. Yeah. And now I feel like we can take them to those PG and PG-13 movies with a little bit of guidance. And, we still have to check. But I think... like Iron Man and Star Trek weren't really a problem for them.
Yeah. Okay, so I got a few years anyways. Unless I go with the Merlin time, like listening to Merlin on some of his shows and some of the other, like every parent's different.
Every parent's different. Yeah, every kid is different. You know your own kid and you can make your own judgments. I know kids who can't watch scary movies even now.
Yeah.
And they're like preteens or teens. And then there are other kids who can watch scary stuff at five and it's not a big deal to them. It's just every kid is different.
Yeah. And every podcast evolves or devolves into a parenting podcast if there's parents involved. So
inevitably, we did a parenting episode.
Check that out.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, we did.
Actually, I think I listened to
it. It's called Kids Have Bad Taste, a title given by John Siracusa, and I think it's appropriate.
Well, that's what I was going to say, using in one of the probably it was episode 100, I'm thinking, where you talked about being hypercritical about the things you love is sort of the a bit of a, you know, base premise or whatever for the show, because you get feedback from folks who say, I listened to it, you know, I'm trying to think of maybe a Star Trek or even the Star Wars one I listened to. Episode one, you finally did or whatever. You
know,
2-episode arc on Star Wars episode one. You know, and people would think maybe you're going to tune in and you're all just going to praise it, but it was pretty good, you know.
Well, we tore that one into little pieces.
Yeah.
That was pretty brutal. But even the things we love, even the Star Wars movies, the original trilogy where we did 2 episodes about each of them, you know, there was plenty of stuff to criticize and analyze. And you're right, the John Siracusa approach, the nothing is so perfect that it can't be criticized, and the idea that you can, by thinking critically about something that you liked or loved, you get more out of it. And it goes back to the idea of the book club, that what's the point of a book club? The book club, assuming it's a book club where people actually talk about the book and don't just like sit there and drink wine and don't talk about the book.
Yeah.
But if you go there and you talk about the book, you know, the point is to sort of like get perspectives about this book and why, you know, why it told the story the way it did and what that means and what the author might have intended as a message and all of that makes it kind of unfold and you go, oh, wow, that's really interesting. And it makes it more and you appreciate it more by having thought about it like that. And I think that's what we try to do.
Yeah. So let's get a little hypercritical, I guess, of The Incomparable.
Sure.
And maybe we'll find out things that we like more about it.
This is my life every day. I'm thinking about hypercritical about things that I do, whether it's Incomparable or Macworld or anything like that. Absolutely.
And actually stepping back for a second, I guess, do you do this show in this studio or is that a sort of home podcast stuff? Or do you have a
little think mix? I've done The Incomparable in this particular room once, which was at WWDC when John and Dan Morin and Serenity Caldwell were all here.
Right,
because that was our chance to do it again, do the rare in-person podcast.
Yeah,
and the first couple I did, I think, like at 5 or 5:30 in the afternoon in my office, back a couple years ago, because we hadn't settled on the time. Most of the episodes we record now are at 8 o'clock Pacific, 11 Eastern, so it's pretty late for our East Coast guys, but they stay up late, and so I sit on my bed. I've got a Yeti, a blue Yeti on a tripod. It didn't used to be just on my stomach. Now it's on a tripod, and I close the door and say goodnight to my kids who are going to bed about then, and plug in my headphones and I record most of the time sitting on my bed. There are a few that I've done in various other places, but nine times out of ten, it's just I'm sitting. My house is very small. I don't have an office.
Yeah.
So that's where I do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's where I think people would sort of have the idea that, you know, you're with this Macworld. You work for Macworld. You'd have your pick of gear, maybe, and your pick of a. Huh. You'd have like the big fancy studio at the top of the Macworld Tower.
Well, I mean, podcasting is definitely not a huge revenue stream for us.
Yeah.
In fact, I think Macworld's podcast does about as well as The Incomparable in terms of ad sales, which is it's better than nothing. And coming on, I think we all have Lex Friedman to thank for that. But you know, so one of the reasons we have the studio at all is because I'm a believer in the medium, and I think that doing audio and we do videos, and this can be a voiceover studio, and we can do our podcasting in here, and we can do other audio recording in here, and so we built a studio in here. On a budget, you know, we've got some boom arms and some microphones and an iMac, and those are pretty easy to come by because we have like test systems from the lab, and I think this iMac was one of them. And we bought a FireWire mixer. And then at home, my setup is, yeah, it started out, it was a Blue Snowball. And then after a while, I bought a Yeti, which is basically the microphone I recommend to anybody who wants to be a podcaster, is to get a Yeti because it's better than the Snowball. It's got a headphone jack. It's pretty cheap. It's like $100 most of the time you can find it for around then. And then only in the last 6 months did I get a tripod, mostly because I wanted to put on a pop filter because I edit my own podcast and I could hear all the pops. Yeah. And it bugged the crap out of me. So I finally decided, okay, if I'm going to get a pop filter, then I need to get a stand, and I don't have anything to clip it to, so I ended up getting a tripod, an instrument tripod, and that's actually worked really great. And I don't have to cradle the microphone on my stomach anymore, so that's nice.
Yeah, well, and I'll post. I took a picture of the room here, the space, and as I'm obviously getting used to a pop filter.
That's right.
I should have Dan gave me. I had Dan on this show, and he laid into me for not having a pop filter. So
I took the pop filter off of my mic at home. Because we did one of our Dungeons & Dragons episodes that we've done a few of where we actually play it. We're slowly playing a game of Dungeons & Dragons on the internet. Like, that's never happened before. It was like a 90-degree day, sort of like today when we're recording this. It was one of our rare hot days.
Yeah.
And I couldn't bear to be inside in our house recording that one. So I literally set up a lawn chair, you know, like a captain's chair in the backyard and took the tripod out there. But I didn't take the pop filter out there.
Yeah.
And I sat and I recorded an episode outside, which actually, even with the Yeti, you know, it actually sounded pretty good. It didn't pick up a lot of outside noise. But when I brought it back inside, I forgot to clip the pop filter on, and I recorded an episode without the pop filter. And I was sitting there editing it, and I went, "Pop filter!" And I could hear as little as this little tiny thing of pantyhose that's an inch away from the microphone looks.
Whose pantyhose is it?
This is like extra pantyhose that was rejected by the pantyhose factory, right. So they make it into pop filters. But it makes a difference, so
yeah.
I put it back on.
Yeah. I'll have to do some before and after experiments. There's probably it's like most things where the podcast producers listen to their podcasts with better headphones than anybody will likely listen to the podcast with.
Probably.
For the most part. I mean, there's obviously a few right. audiophiles that listen.
And we're listening to the uncompressed version, not the MP3 version.
Exactly.
Either. So it's by far better than anybody is actually going to hear in the end. Yeah.
Which that's where I think going back to the microphone recommendations and things, you're talking about the Yeti, which is, around 100 and change, I think.
Yeah, it's depending on the sale on Amazon, it's roughly $100. Yeah. Sometimes it's less.
And I know when I've seen that go out, you know, like I think a couple weeks ago there was a sale on the Yeti, and
yeah.
a bunch of people tweeted about it, and then you get a bunch of people, podcast nerds or audio, quote, I'm doing the air quotes, nerds, who say, no, you should never buy the Yeti because it's whatever, and it picks
right.
up that, and then you need to spend the $250 on the, say, Pro Rode podcaster, which is the
right.
if on the of the 30 episodes of the show, I don't have the stats in front of me, but it's probably like 20 of the 30 people that I've interviewed. Anyways, if they're not using a Heil, they're using a Rode podcaster.
Rode podcaster, yeah, I've got one of those that's in over out in the office, and it's not bad. It's different. It's really quiet. It's okay. I feel like the difference in quality for me. For podcasting, the difference in quality is not enough to justify the difference in price between those two products.
But I'm of the spirit, too, or the mind of, you know, especially if it's your first time. Yeah, I hear people telling people, no, you need to go buy the Rode Podcaster. And you know that whatever the number is, like, it's, you know, most people don't get to 10 episodes, let alone 100 or 150 or whatever.
I did a podcasting panel at a sci-fi convention in L.A. They asked me to be on the panel, which was very nice because I'm not really in, like, sci-fi fandom at all. But somebody I know who does a sci-fi podcast that I do listen to was setting up this panel, and he said, I'd love for you to be on it. And I said, sure. And I had to pay my own, you know, I drove down to and stayed at my in-laws and I paid my own way to the convention and I did it. But what the thing I really learned from that entire thing was a lot of the people who are doing podcasting, they have no budget. They don't have a low budget. They literally have no budget. And when I said, you know, you shouldn't use a headset, you should buy a USB microphone, I had a bunch of hands who were like, what do you recommend? But it's too, they're too expensive. I was looking at the Snowball, but it's too expensive. I'm like, oh my God, the Snowball's like $50.
Yeah.
And they're like, it's too expensive. It's like, wow, okay. You know, it gave me some perspective about there are a lot of people who are doing this. They love it. They may not even do it for more than a handful of episodes, and they're not really willing to put that, you know, $50 into it. I'd say if you're, you know, I started with a Snowball too.
Yeah.
I what I've learned after all this time is that I've been with the Yeti long enough to feel like I don't feel a need to upgrade from the Yeti. I think it's fine. It's got a manual gain control. It's got a mute button. It's got a headphone jack, and it's got a volume control. So it sounds really good. I think that I'm sure I could find a microphone that would sound better. I'm not sure that after it all got put together, it would really that anybody would notice. And that's a trend. I mean, you've talked to all of these people. I think there's a trend in audio, which is, you know, you can go super high end because there are super high end recording things. The musicians especially have incredible opinions of what good audio is, and they apply that knowledge to podcasting. And I would argue that maybe what's important for a musician is not necessarily as important for a podcaster. It's a bottomless pit. You could invest huge amounts of money in equipment and editing and processing of voices and all sorts of crazy stuff. You could go on forever. But I think that there's probably a point where it's like, this sounds good, this sounds professional, this sounds clear. And for me, I feel no need to go above the Yeti. Now, if I got somebody who wanted to be on our podcast and wanted to do it with like iPhone headphones, I would say you can't be on, you know. Yeah. Or I would say, can you buy a Snowball? Can you buy a Yeti? Can I send you a microphone?
Yeah.
Because you know, there is a level that's unacceptable. But I think I think the Yeti is the best I've found in terms of price. And when I talk to people about it, I'm like, it's $100. For $100, you get a really good microphone. Yes, you might be able to get a better one for $250.
Yeah, but then you can also get a better one for $350 if
sure.
you got the Heil, and if you got the
oh yeah, yeah. I mean, you talk to Dan Benjamin, and he'll talk about the Heil that he uses, and if I was setting up a professional recording studio like he has, like Leo Laporte has, I would probably do that. But you know, in Macworld, you know, it was a big spend to spend, you know, $500 on what we've got here, basically, yeah. Or maybe $1,000 total, gradually over time. So, you know, it all depends on your priorities. I mean, I do think it's like computer people, you know, and I know those people really well. I'm one of those people where computer people are like very finicky about their hardware and their software, and there's like the stuff, the right way to do it and the wrong way to do it. And audio people are like that too. They get really finicky about stuff, and that's fun and that's great. When occasionally it's kind of chauvinistic about, well, you really should have some serious equipment. but in the end, I think I'm not sure that it matters that much when all you're doing is ending up with a little low bitrate mono podcast.
Yeah. So I guess with your guests, you mentioned, you know, like having mics, because you do have a variety of guests, and anybody who's listened to any of the episodes would know there's a I don't know what the total number would be, 8, 10 maybe random.
Yeah, we usually will have somewhere between 3 and 5. Guests in an episode, and the panel itself is probably about a dozen people that kind of come and go. But and they're all over the country. I think they're all in the U.S.
No Canadians,
no Canadians yet, but it's always possible. No Brits either, although the time would be very hard for them. Recording it live is actually a big problem. That limits us to when we can record. We're all pretty busy, and finding a time that's in common is hard, because I've got people who are parents. Like Glenn Fleischman can't do it before about 8 o'clock Pacific. Yeah. And he would prefer it at 8:30.
Yeah.
But that's too late for the East Coasters. But if I get it earlier, like I could do it, I could stay after work and at 6 or 6:30 or something, I could record it here. That would be better for the East Coasters, maybe, unless they were out doing something and then coming back for this. But then the people with kids on the West Coast couldn't do that. Yeah. So that's one of the reasons I think that we're a little more geographically limited than – it's kind of a miracle that we've even got East and West Coast people on given all of that.
Yeah. No, definitely. And it says – yeah, just knowing the little that I've done with scheduling as far as reoccurring guests and then trying to incorporate random folks, which I guess what I was going to ask you is as far as mics and stuff, do you sort of require them or have most of them had sort of some gear that they've brought to the table?
Well, like I said, at this point, I basically do require that they have a good microphone. I actually have somebody who's only been on one episode and I'm scheduling him on a new episode soon. And his first episode, he's a very technical guy. I know that he's got a good microphone somewhere. And yet when he came on Skype, he was obviously – I know the sound. He was obviously using an iPhone headset because I could hear the rattling of it as it slides against your T-shirt. I know what that sounds like. And I want to – and early on in the podcast, Greg Noss, one of the panelists, he was doing it that way too. And we had one of those, you know, I need you to get a better microphone. Yeah. And he got a Snowball and it's fine. That's good. That's good enough. It's a little noisy. I do a lot of denoising and stuff, but it's fine. Most of them have a Yeti now, I think, or a Rode Podcaster. Serenity Caldwell has a fancy, I don't know what it is, but she's got a fancy condenser mic and the blue XLR digital input thingy that goes XLR to USB. I forget the name of it because she had a really good microphone. And so it was better for her to buy that digital converter than buy a USB microphone. That makes sense. The Icicle. Yeah, I think that's right. They have all the cute names. But most people have the Yeti or maybe the Snowball or the Podcaster. And if I've got somebody on who's going to be a new guest, that's what actually worries me when I try to get somebody new on is I got to make sure that they got a decent microphone. Oh, the other story is that Glenn Fleischman was on for like a year using a headset. And there are people – I'm sorry, people who like headset microphones. There are people out there who think headset microphones are appropriate for podcasting. They're not. They sound terrible. Even now, if you are, NFL sideline broadcaster, and you've got one of those little headset mics that costs. I was watching one of them talk, and they sounded clear even with all the crowd noise. And I thought, oh my God, how much must that microphone cost? That's like a $5,000 microphone. But a consumer level headset that you would the one that you're using,
the $29 one,
is not good enough. And I don't say that as an audio snob. I'm saying it because I would listen to the isolated track of Glenn, and all I could hear was when he wasn't talking. And it's not that he was heavy breathing. I mean, maybe he was heavy breathing a little bit.
It's a lot of work podcasting.
The microphone is hanging in front of his mouth or his nose. It's just not it's not it doesn't sound good. So we made Glenn get a better mic, and I think he's actually upgraded a couple of times and now he's got, I think, a podcaster on a boom. And he has his own podcast too.
Yeah.
So that was it was like first he was a headset guy, then I cajoled him into getting like a Snowball or a Yeti, and then he got his own podcast, and then he got a boom arm and a Rode Podcaster, and now he's good to go.
He's good to go. Yeah, that's the New Disruptors, right?
Is his New Disruptors, right. Right. But he was a headset guy, and we made fun of Glenn's breathing, and it turned out the breathing was not Glenn. The breathing was that headset, and it just is unfortunately placed and not good enough quality.
Yeah, there's no off mic. You're never off mic with that, unfortunately.
No.
So, well, let's talk about, I guess, the way that you record. So you have all these guests who are all over the place, and presumably you're using Skype to...
Yeah, other than the Dungeons & Dragons ones we've done Google Hangouts on air. We tried to... We've talked about doing the video stuff. The problem is the video, you have to actually put effort into not looking horrendous. And like speaking as somebody who records sitting on his bed... I would be like a shadowy figure with weird lighting because it's not – I mean, it's
not – That
goes
well with Dungeons & Dragons.
It's not – well, that's true, actually. I should just turn off the lights, and it's very dark. And we tried to record one with John Siracusa, and he doesn't even have – he has a Mac Pro. He doesn't even have a camera there.
Right.
I said, I can send you – I've got a FireWire EyeSight camera I can send you. Or you could buy a Logitech HD camera for $90. But, you know, he – it's so we don't do that other than the D&D thing where we thought it would be fun, and we use Roll20, which is a plugin for Google Hangouts that shows like the map and lets you roll the dice. Did that. But otherwise, yes, we use Skype, and almost everybody uses Call Recorder, which is the Ecamm software plugin that lets you record a Skype conversation, and it records your audio on one track and the Skype audio of everyone else on the other track. And then they've got a utility that actually lets you split that into two tracks, and then they mail me track one, which is their voice. Some people use QuickTime Player. Mm-hmm. One of the nice things about OS X right now is that if somebody's on a Mac and they need to be on the podcast, I don't actually need to get them to install any special software. I can say, go to QuickTime Player, do new audio recording, click the triangle, select your microphone, select good quality or high quality, but not the best quality. Press the big red button. You're recording.
Yeah.
You know, it's great that you can do that. So some people do stuff like that. But it's mostly all of us in Call Recorder. So everybody records their end, and then they put it somewhere, usually Dropbox. We have a Dropbox shared folder. And then I pull it out of there, and I take those and I'll convert those into the right format. Usually those come in as like MP4s or QuickTime movie files, and I will convert them to AIFF using one of the tools that just comes with Call Recorder, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'll put it in Logic Pro, which I'm using now. I used to use GarageBand, but I use Logic Pro now. And then you got to line them up and make sure, I import my Skype track along with my audio track, and then I line all of their voices up to match. Although for the last month or so, I've been using Sidetrack, which is this thing that's not yet out by Marco Arment.
Oh, right.
That automatically lines up those files. And I'd say it works sort of 5 out of 6 times. It doesn't work every time because it'll find something that isn't quite right. But it works pretty well. When it works, it's magical because it automatically senses where the audio is in relation to your Skype track, and it crops it at the right place or pads it with silence at the right place. And then it scans the file for lag in case the clocks are a little bit out of sync. So
right.
Like they start lined up at the 1 minute mark, but by the 70 minute mark, they're a half a second off, and it fixes that by patching in silence. It's kind of amazing. It's good. It's just a little command line utility. And when he releases it, I think he's going to just ask that people mention his product on the show.
I've heard him talk about it on ATP.
But it works. I'm one of the beta testers, and it's good. It's not perfect. It occasionally will throw a fit and generate a 5 gigabyte file that doesn't make any sense. But most of the time it works pretty well. So that saves me a lot of time in lining that stuff up.
And so what you're saying is, just so I understand what's going on exactly, is then when, because you have whatever it is, let's say there's 5 tracks of different folks talking. And normally what I've heard with doing what you're doing is commonly called a
double ender.
Yeah.
Although in my case, it's often a 4 or 5 ender.
Quad ender.
Yes. It's a multi-ender.
Sounds dirty, but it's San Francisco.
Yeah. I don't even know how a 5 ender would work, but yeah, sure.
Now I've lost my train of thought because I saw things in San Francisco.
I drop them all.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you're in the heart of darkness now. It's Apocalypse Now all of a sudden.
Fisherman's Wharf and all that.
So I drop those files into Logic. So I end up with a stack of voices of everybody's isolated voices and a Skype track, which I generally delete unless somebody had a dropout or something.
Yeah.
It's a good backup, but generally it's just for reference or for like the before and after show stuff. If I save some of that, sometimes people turn off their recording and then there's something funny happens.
Yeah.
But for the main show, basically it's just a stack of voices. And like the theme song is on its own track, and the announcer computer voice that says what the episode number is on its own track, and that's it. And then
and because what typically happens there is, you know, most podcasters probably line those up and then
press save
and export. But you take it the extra level.
I don't know if most podcasters do that. I would say most podcasters probably don't record multi-track. They probably just take the Skype track. Or they're using, if it's in person even, maybe they just have an analog mixing board and they're taking the single track. And I could do that. I don't for 2 reasons. One is there are Skype dropouts.
Yeah.
And that's bad. That I don't like them. And then two, the audio quality is better when it's a source recording. Skype does compress the hell out of things. Actually, in some ways, the Skype recording is better than an untouched source recording, because the untouched source recording, you can hear the noise,
right.
And its variable volume, and Skype does a really good job actually of just smashing the hell out of the audio and making it serviceable and audible.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I compress the audio. I run it through a compressor and an EQ and a noise gate, and I will run it through Sound Soap and pull the that fan noise out of it if I need to, because some of my people are East Coasters who've got their air conditioning on, and if they turn them off, they die, so they have to leave it on. And we try to pull that stuff out. And then I use Strip Silence, which is a command in Logic, which is awesome. That takes the your 2 hour or 1 hour long single audio track, and it basically deletes everything that is silent, all silent passages. So you're left with these little blobs in the track that are only when somebody's making noise.
Right.
And that allows me to be really lazy, because then rather than sitting there and playing through the entire episode, I can actually just scroll until because collisions where people are talking over each other are visible. You can actually see when there's noise on multiple audio tracks at once. And that's the stuff that I work on. I really don't, unless somebody said a bad word or went on a real digression that I want to take out. And
since
since I'm on the episode, Lisa Schmeiser. strange. At least Lisa's the one who swears on the podcast.
I wasn't talking about
swearing.
I was talking about the rants that someone goes on.
Oh, the rants. Merlin. Okay. No, all of us are guilty of those rants. I take myself out, actually, a lot.
That's the nature of the show, I think.
As the host, I'm like, there's enough of me in there. I'll take myself out. But I'm on the show, so I know what happened. So I might take some of that stuff out. But generally, when somebody's just talking for a couple of minutes, I just let them talk. I can see that they're talking and nobody else said a word. Mm-hmm. I can see like if there was like somebody bumped their microphone, and that's great because I can see it and I just take it out. I don't even need to hear, oh, I heard a little bump there. I bet maybe somebody's door shut because somebody came in to get something. And just take all that stuff out. And then I get to the collision part, which is where somebody stops and somebody does a false start and somebody else does a real start, but then says, oh, I'm sorry, I was going to say, and then I can take that. And that stuff I actually work on. That's the stuff where I pull it apart, because with that many people, like Dan Benjamin, when I told him I was going to do 3, 4, 5 panelists, he said, you can't. It's too many people.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what the show is a group of friendly people having a chat. But where I pay for that is in those collisions, because on Skype and in real life, people start to talk over each other and then eventually somebody wins. And on the show, I want to take that out. I want it to sound much more like somebody stopped, their idea was done, and then the next person picked up and they continued. And in reality, a couple other people probably false started in there.
Right.
But, you know, we didn't, you know, the audience doesn't need to hear that part of it. I try to smooth that stuff out. But that's basically all I do in terms of editing.
Yeah. And to us, seeing... when I say us, I mean like the lazy podcasters among the listeners out there when I do a group recording, I do the like, you know, you're just all, whoever else is coming in on Skype is on one track. My audio will sound awesome and you guys will sound compressed and then we'll all get compressed together. And but I don't do a lot of chopping it up. But and hearing the way you describe it, I mean, it is extra work, but it doesn't sound like a lot of extra work, you know? And
at the start, it was a lot of extra work. And I felt like I kind of had to do it because of the crosstalk, because there were so many guests.
Yeah.
But and if I was just doing a one-on-one, I probably wouldn't bother unless there was a Skype problem. But as time's gone on, it's become really, really efficient to do it, because everybody knows they put their file, they split the file, they have their solo file, they drop it in Dropbox.
Yeah.
I take it out of Dropbox, drop it on the AIFF converter that comes with Call Recorder, use Marco's tool, drag it into Logic. It's not that complicated. And it does give me the ability when, you know, you've got one person talking and then somebody else is in the background going like that. You're like, crap, you know, if you're on that flattened Skype file, there's nothing you can do other than take out whatever that person was saying, even though that was perfectly fine because there's the coughing guy on the other microphone. You know, and it doesn't happen all that often, but, you know, it's less work. It's more work than not doing it, but it's a lot less work than it used to be for me. And so I'm going to keep doing it because it gives me enough better quality for me to do it. That said, when we do a live episode, like the one that we did in here, there is something really nice about like, oh, thank God, I can't edit that episode. It's like nice. It's like that episode cannot be edited.
Yeah.
Great. Because that's really easy to post. That takes me like half an hour to post live instead of like a couple, you know, 2-3 hours.
Yeah. So. Which is ironic in that, and folks might think because, like I was bugging you before we started, or maybe it was in the show, I can't remember now, but, you know, coming to Macworld, you sort of think, well, they're going to have the 64-track studio and Mac Pro towers and new Macs that haven't even released yet, and iPhone 6s,
sure.
I see you're using, and you know all that kind of stuff.
Sure, I got the 6-inch iPhone here.
But in reality, and so then you could do a live recording where you could actually have all four of the mics that we have in the room here on individual tracks.
Well,
and then,
we are actually, as we're recording this, we are on individual tracks. It's a digital mixer.
Right.
So we can have everybody on their own track. But if we crosstalk and I want to cut it out, I can't,
right,
because
we're all in
I'll
room.
Hear on your track, I'll hear me in the background trying to talk.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then it's, you get weird like ghost voices of like, why? I thought I heard Jason in the background there, but he wasn't on his microphone. Why did that happen? So in the end, the multi-track in a room like this is mostly valuable because if the levels are off, I mean, you can compress the tracks individually and level them out so that if I'm too loud at a point and you're too loud at a point, it can balance it off. But editing wise, there's not a whole lot you can do.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. So all that aside, or all that being said, I guess there was episode 133, which I can tell.
I know that it's burned on my brain.
Which anybody
spent like 60 hours working on that.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So it's the episode is the, if I was had my gear set up at home, I could play back a little bit of it, and maybe I'll throw some in here. But that's a whole other licensing issue. We never really crossed that issue with podcasting, like quoting, playing back other people's.
That's
podcasts.
Fair use. If you're if you're playing back my podcast while you're talking about it, that's totally fair use.
There you go. I just won't put the whole thing in. And
permission granted.
There you go. But anyways, it's the musical episode, which I'll put a link to the show note to it in the show notes. Which if you're listening to this from somewhere you found it, sskTN.com. Look for Show Me Your Mic, and Jason's smiling face will be there. Episode 30. You can find a link to it. Oh, there you go.
Now, nobody will be able to hear this, but it's the Incomparable Radio Theater of the Air, which was our old time radio episode.
Okay, so talk me through that one, because there was obviously a fair bit more editing. Producing, and this is going above and beyond.
This is my respect for audio editors, audio professionals everywhere. We did for April 1st, we tried to do something different, and so for this year, we tried to do old time radio radio dramas like from the 30s and 40s. I guess before that too, but the dawn of radio before television came in and sort of turned radio into something different. And a guy named David Lohr, who is a playwright and designer, and he lives in Indiana, and he's a fan of The Incomparable and of Macworld and of a bunch of other podcasts and stuff that we did, and he talked to us all the time on Twitter. And we had been talking about doing a radio drama for a while and couldn't figure out how to write it because we're not professional dramatists. And we all always were like, yeah, we'll get to it. And then I thought, hey, we know a playwright. And I asked him, and he wrote a script. He wrote his own script, and that's basically what we used with lots of references and things. So we did it, and we thought, okay, well, now we need to record this. We'll just do it like we do the podcast. So we got everybody who was in the episode on a Skype call, and that was an enormous, insane, like 10-11-person Skype call. It was actually two Skype calls, so it wasn't exactly the same people, but it was close.
Right.
It was like 10 people every time. Everybody Skype, recording their own end.
Skype didn't barf on that?
Skype didn't barf. It was okay. Oh, I mean, it was when people were talking at once, it was a disaster. But the good thing was we were largely just – people were muting if they weren't on, and everybody had the script.
Yeah.
And what we did was we read through the script, and everybody read their lines once through, and then we did it one more time, and then we did pickups where – Serenity, who is directing, basically would say, give me a different line reading. So we ended up with two and a half hour sessions over the course of about 3 days. There's like a Sunday and a Tuesday. We recorded the whole thing, and I was thinking, all right, I got this now. I can assemble this. It'll be a little harder, but I can do it. And I did the first edit of the first day on the Sunday. I did the first edit like Monday of the stuff we recorded the first day. And dropping in the dialogue and getting all the right takes and all of that, that wasn't so bad. And then I listened to it and I thought, oh my God, this needs atmosphere, sound effects, room tone. When people are walking, you need to hear them walking. You know, not just the gunshots, but all of that other stuff. I'm going to need stock audio. It became a whole lot bigger. And then, I mean, and editing the dialogue together was harder than a normal episode because you literally do have to listen to every single one and then pick which take you want and all of that. And then we had to do some re-recordings. We replaced one of the actors because the first actor didn't do a great job. We had him doing a funny accent and it didn't work. And then we got somebody new. And then Serenity wanted to redo one of her parts because two of her funny voices were too similar. So I had to drop in a whole new set of her responses to all the other characters in one episode. So the old parts were still there from everyone else, and then she had a new part inserted, which took extra time. So in the end, it probably took me somewhere between 40 and 60 hours to edit that together. I got sick in the middle of that week, probably because I was working so hard on this stuff. And in the end, that was good because I ended up sitting on my couch feverish for one day, just literally doing nothing but editing in Logic.
Oh.
But I learned a lot about Logic. I learned about a lot of the effects plugins that let you do room atmosphere on a per track basis and how you fade those effects in and out in Logic. And in the end, we ended up with, I think it's like 40 minutes. It's not even an hour. It's like 40 minutes of these different radio dramas. And I think it actually sounds pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Breen wrote some original music for it.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
got a lot of stock sound effects, and some people recorded, like Dan Serenity recorded some new sound effects for us, and David Lohr had some royalty-free sound effects, and I used some public domain sound effects or Creative Commons sound effects that from a sound effects library on the internet. So I kind of cobbled it all together, and it was a lot of fun, and I'm really proud of the result, but it was a shocking amount of work. It was fun work, but it was I have huge respect for the people who put together all that stuff, and especially the people who put together that stuff in the golden age of radio where they had where they did it live with like a Foley board. I mean, yeah. I suppose it was easier once they got set up because they couldn't tweak it like I could tweak it. But I had to do it all after the fact because we did it all over Skype.
Yeah. So when are you, no joke, like 60 hours of...
Yeah, somewhere if you count the recording and the editing, it was somewhere in there because it basically started on that Saturday or Sunday and it went all the way through the following like... Saturday or Sunday, or no, the following, was it a Monday or a Sunday when I posted it? So it was kind of like I was doing it on the bus on the way to and from work. I was doing it when I got home from work until I went to sleep. And then I was sick that one day, so I just sat on the couch that entire day and did it. And
so when it started playing back there, does it sort of give you a little bit of a chills or fever?
Yeah, I remember. I remember every little damn thing that's in there, including the mistakes, the things that I wish I could have fixed, but I just didn't have the time to fix it. But it was fun, and it was a great learning experience, and that's why I love doing stuff like that. It's because it pushed my knowledge of the audio stuff way beyond anything that I knew. I learned exactly enough to get the podcast done. So it was fun to push myself like that, and I would do it again. I would love to do more of those, actually, because it was a lot of fun to do.
Mm-hmm. And so was that Logic Pro 10 or was that the...
That was Logic Pro 9 that I did that in because that was in April.
Right.
I'm in 10 now mostly because I wanted to try it out to see what was different. I wrote an article for Macworld about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think for podcast-only people, I wouldn't recommend somebody upgrading from 9 to 10 because most of the features that are added are just... music features, although the interface is a lot nicer and more understandable. The menus make sense in a way that the old Logic menus sort of like were empty and all the real commands were in other weird places under buttons or menus inside palettes and stuff. If you're somebody who's using GarageBand and are thinking of going up to Logic, I would say that Logic Pro 10 is a nice thing for those people because it is more understandable. It feels a little more like GarageBand because they've done this interface refinement on it, and it works a lot better than it used to. But if you're already on 9 and you don't do music, you're just doing podcasts, I'm not sure it's worth that upgrade.
Yeah, I'm in that boat with Logic. I have Logic Express 8, 9. I can't remember which one it is, but yeah, it's the same thing where it does what it, as much as I'd love the nice shiny new interface.
Sure,
but for $200, I'm to the point where I'm on no budget, not just low budget.
And you're spending $200 for nicer menus, and it's not it's not worth it for that. I would say if you're somebody who is a podcaster who's using GarageBand and you're frustrated because it's slow and it takes a lot of time to slide around tracks and move things around and all of that, I do think Logic is a nice upgrade. It's made me much much faster. I mean, I can't, it's cut my time spent editing an episode in, I think half is not even enough to say, I think a third of what I used to spend editing because of like five features in Logic, like strip silence, like select all forward, things that, you know, I wrote an article on Macworld that basically was like, why aren't these in GarageBand? I don't believe in the conspiracy theory that they're not there because Apple just wants to sell copies of Logic. I think it's more like Apple has decided that they don't care about podcasting. They did one version of GarageBand that was for podcasting, and since then they just don't care. And so they aren't putting those features in. If they put those features in, GarageBand would be the best because it's free or really cheap.
Yeah, if you don't have it.
But, you know, but Logic is actually faster than GarageBand, way more responsive. I can do way more tracks without having any problems in Logic versus GarageBand. And then it's got those features that save time. So,
yeah, the select all following the Shift-F.
Shift-F.
Was like, I think,
huge.
I'd been doing, because I don't do a lot of editing of my shows. Like I said, I'm lazy. No, I'm efficient and quick.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not lazy.
But you end up in a project where you need to select like everything and slide it a little bit forward or backward.
I was always zooming out.
You zoom out
and then like making sure I was like, oh shoot, that one part isn't selected yet. Okay, no, go get that one. And I still to this day, even though I know select all following works, I still don't trust it because back in the day when I used to do it my ignorant way, I would always end up missing something.
You miss something and then like, yep. Been
so
there.
That fear in my brain.
I posted episodes with that before.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, why is this person's voice suddenly appearing a second time while they're talking? Yeah. Oh, no.
Which, on your show, especially when you're doing all the edits you're doing, you're going to run into that even more.
Oh, yeah.
And then you did a DVD bonus track as well for the
Radio episode. Yeah. We did like a recap of it. It's sort of like what we learned and all that. And that's the After Dark on 5x5. So it's actually linked to from the main episode is the After Dark. And that's got outtakes and David, the playwright, and Serenity, who directed it, and I talking about it and sort of how we put it together. And at the end of it, it's actually got the Skype version of one of our read-throughs. So if somebody's interested in sort of like how you go from something, you know, that's just voices to something else, I just dropped on the read-through version of one of the stories. So it's like a 15-minute story or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's interesting to see how what of it is there and then all the things that aren't there because it's got no sound effects. It's just dialogue. And that was fun. And then I did with I also did another kind of post-mortem with Mike Hurley on Command Space.
Right, yeah.
So if you're interested in this subject that we've been talking about for the last 10 minutes, there's probably a good 3 hours worth of conversation on it on podcast somewhere else.
Yes, and we can just add to that now.
But it was fun. It was like a stunt, but it was a fun stunt, and everybody had a good time. And, you know, podcasting isn't just about people talking like we're talking. It's an audio medium, and I love that it can be used in all sorts of other ways too. And our little radio drama was just one little attempt to kind of push what a podcast could do.
Yeah, I think that's what I find so interesting about The Incomparable as a show is that it's like you said, it's a book club. It's not that it's so unique in what it's doing, but the way that it's not typical in podcasting circles these days. Well, I mean, who knows? The internet's wide and large.
There's lots of podcasts. So what I'll say is I think how we're different is that a lot of podcasts I listen to are very, very timely. It's this week in – like Sword and Laser is a sci-fi podcast that Veronica Belmont does and Tom Merritt, I think. And it essentially is the same premise as The Incomparable in that it's geek culture. And there are a bunch of others like this too. But Sword and Laser is a good example, and others do it the same way, where it's like, welcome to this week's episode of Sword and Laser or you know, sci-fi podcast, choose your own name. Let's talk about what happened this week in sci-fi. Oh, this book came out and this movie is coming out and, you know, and we're reading this book and we'll talk about that book later. And it's got continuity. And what I want to do with The Incomparable is have no continuity, essentially. You can listen to episodes in any order. You can skip episodes.
Kind of like the sitcom.
Yeah, well,
the 80s sitcom.
Because what I want is I want you to be able to say, oh, they did a Raiders of the Lost Ark episode. I want to listen to that. Oh, they did a Star Wars episode. I want to listen to that. And not like, you know, Well, we talked about Raiders of the Lost Ark in that episode, but before that, we had 30 minutes of news from 3 years ago now that's not interesting to you, and we talked about a controversy that got settled and nobody cares about anymore. Yeah. I just didn't want that. I didn't want all that kind of junk cluttering up the show. I wanted the show to just be like completely timeless. It's about this thing. And I think that is the one thing that is different about what we're doing than most of the other podcasts I listen to that are not top. They're timely, not topic oriented. They might have a topic, but like even Accidental Tech Podcast or Hypercritical The Prompt, or I mean, there are all these podcasts out there. If you start with follow up, and then you have a topic. But if I only want to go back and listen to the topic, I got to skip through all the follow up. And I guess you can do that. I wanted for something like this where it's not news was never going to be part of the charter. I do that for my job, right? It was never going to be part of the charter. I didn't want it to be about news or fandom or anything like that. I just wanted it to be about the work. Yeah. I wanted it to be something you could just take off the shelf and say, oh, yeah, I finally read that book that they talked about, and then go play the episode. And it's like, it doesn't matter that it's a year old now.
Yeah. And there's actually, that's what I. Having become a fan of the show over whatever number of episodes.
Homework.
Well, no, I was a fan before that, before I had to do it as homework, self-imposed homework. But no, I can't remember what episodes, let's say the Superman one, I think, Man of Steel, the episode came out, but I hadn't seen the movie yet. And then actually after watching the movie, I was actually looking forward to coming back and listening to that episode because I wanted to hear, okay, what was the, in episode 100, actually, there's a quote you said that somebody had said to you about the Incomparable that, they've seen the movie a bunch of times, but never thought about that scene or that scenario the way that you did in the Copper one, sort of drawing things out of that. And
my single favorite moment that we've ever done is when we were talking about The Empire Strikes Back, and I think this is the feedback that I was referring to in episode 100. And I think it was John Siracusa and Dan Morin were both talking about talking about Leia and Han and their relationship, and they go off in the Millennium Falcon together, and they're in the asteroid belt, and then they get to Cloud City, and their relationship is different, and John, I think, said, I assume that they've had sex at this point, and I just went, oh my God, I have seen that movie how many hundreds of times and had never thought about that. Yeah. It completely changed the way I looked at the scenes of them together in Cloud City. And I agree completely. That's absolutely what is being implied there. But I never thought about it that way. And how great is that to have something that you know, whether it's something you just saw or it's something that you know by heart, and then you hear somebody's perspective and it changes your perspective about that thing. That's awesome. That's great.
Never mind having John Siracusa be the one who tells you about adults.
who broke it to you that Han Solo and Princess Leia were sleeping together? Man, it was John Siracusa.
Oh, nightmares. just talking through, because on a couple of shows I've done, we've tried doing a bit of the, like, you know, sort of reviewing a show that we've watched. And one show we're doing right now is sort of we're rewatching Game of Thrones and sort of talking through it on an episode-by-episode basis. But we do preempt it with a bunch of topical.
Yeah.
So we're sort of half and half.
Everybody does that.
Yeah. And so, but you're, in doing so, it's kind of made me think about how you guys actually prepare for an episode. So like the Man of Steel one or whatever show you're doing or topic, what's your process? I'll have to go through each individual guest ask someday, but you know, what's your process for preparing for knowing that you're going to be talking about a show again and presumably you're rewatching usually.
But if it's something that I'm, if it's something like Man of Steel or Iron Man 3, I just saw it and I might write down a couple of things, but mostly it's so recently in my mind that I'll just wing it because we've got it. I think some people take more notes. I think John will write down a couple of points that he wants to make. For Star Trek Into Darkness, I saw it twice, and so the second time I actually brought like a little piece of paper and I wrote a couple of things down while I was watching it. That's generally my process when it's an older work is I'll watch it again and I'll take notes. If it's the first time, I won't take notes. I'll just watch it.
Experience it.
Exactly. But for like Star Wars, I would sit there with my iPad and like a note app open and I would write notes down. And then when we do the show, I've got my little notepad there with the notes on it. So it varies. Yeah. If I come up with something that I think is a really good idea, I'll write it down. But most of the time I'll just wing it because I've recently seen it and I figured that's probably good enough, especially since I have so many people that it's almost never that I'm fumbling around for a topic to get the conversation going. There are so many people, they're so willing to talk that it's not going to be a problem.
Yeah, it's almost the opposite problem of getting to stop sometimes.
Yeah, it's supposed to be an hour long and it's usually an hour and a half. Like, shut up, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. So in closing, I guess we'll keep speaking of time in an hour, try to keep this show to it around an hour, but it's weird. It's just weird being not having the familiar like logic time. It's a, GarageBand's over there and I don't see the time codes and I don't see, so it's funny to do this way.
It's kind of, it's my home field advantage now.
Exactly. Wow. You can edit my part out. No, it is an interesting way to do, just sort of meta, I guess, a bit, but it's an interesting thing, experiment, I guess, to sort of step out of your usual comfort zone of what you typically would do for a podcast and without all the usual distractions and things and whatnot and taking the wrong bridge to get here. And,
I did it. Occasionally I have somebody guest host, mostly when I'm not available and we need an episode and I can't do it. Or it's a subject everybody wants to do, but I don't know anything about it. And so I'm going to be kind of useless as the host. And I did one where Glenn Fleischman wanted to do a music episode about, I think they might be Giants, and he really wanted to do it. And I said, all right, Glenn, you can host it. And he said, all right, I want to host it. I'm going to set it all up. And I was on it. I was a guest on my own podcast. And it was so great because I had no pressure. I was like, Glenn, this is the best. Yeah. Just whatever. I'm here. Ask me questions.
Yeah.
And it is different. I don't, it's just, I've done 150 of them now. It sort of comes with the territory of doing the host thing. But it's only when I'm a guest somewhere else that I realize, oh, this is a whole lot easier being a guest. Being a host actually is work. You actually do feel the pressure of having the conversation go and making sure you've got a question you can ask if things lag and watching the time and saying, okay, well, we got to wrap it up now.
Yeah.
It's funny when the tables are turned like that.
And then being a guest in somebody else's house.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, recording anything out of your comfort zone. I mean, whether it was sitting in my backyard or I recorded at my mom's house a couple of times when we were visiting her with the door closed. And that was weird because I'm sitting at this little desk and in Arizona. I'm like, what am I doing here? But, it's weird. You do get used to your, whether it's your basement or you're sitting on the edge of your bed or whatever it is.
Yeah. With a microphone on your belly.
Yeah. Those microphones. My belly was my shock mount, but it is no longer. Now I have a tripod.
What's I don't know if you're allowed to say this. You don't have to. I'm not talking. I was going to ask what is some of the most popular episodes, and whether that's, I'm not talking about numbers, but even just feedback and
numbers. Podcast statistics are really hard. Who can say? I would say in terms of feedback, the most popular episodes we've done by far are the Star Wars episodes. We did three 2-part episodes about the original trilogy, and then we did episode 1, and that was also popular. We will go back and do episode 2 and episode 3. It's inevitable. We'll have to do it. Those will be more painful than the original trilogy, but we'll do it. I think those are the most popular. But I hear about all sorts of others that people find fun, whether it's Back to the Future or Ghostbusters or Raiders of the Lost Ark or other things from the 80s that I love, or some of our book podcasts. Some people love it when we tear into something. Some people love our Hugo Awards episode where we talk about the 5 books nominated for Best Sci-Fi Novel of the Year. Usually we don't like them. I think if all we did in every episode was rip on things that we hated, I think it would be a really unpleasant podcast to listen to. Most of the time we like things. Sometimes we don't. And some people really love when we get really angry about something. But I'd say the Star Wars ones are the winners. People love hearing about that. And that's people who are very enthusiastic about something and know it and love it and then are really applying a lot of analysis and brain power to talking about it. And I love those episodes too. I think those are great.
And what about hate mail?
Yeah, we did an episode 150 is actually the feedback episode.
Right.
We get a lot of hate mail. I think the theory is it's about somebody's just seen something, like you seeing Man of Steel. Somebody's just seen something and they liked it, and then they hear a bunch of us say we didn't like it. It's sort of like, huh. I mean, it's a little bit like you guys are saying I'm dumb because I liked it and you didn't.
There was I think I can't remember if it was Lord of the Rings. I think it was Lord of the Rings. I actually had to shut it off because I was like, Like, I'm fully prepared for somebody else not to
and
like
a bunch
it.
Of us like Lord of the Rings.
But I think it was Syracuse or somebody.
That happens. Let me tell you, that happens a lot where one or two people don't like it. Yeah. And then a bunch of people do. And then I get the feedback that says, why did you hate it?
Yeah.
It's like, I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked Ready Player One. I liked Lord of the Rings.
Wait, but Batman, I know you and I disagree with Batman.
I didn't like the Dark Knight so much. I liked the first 90 minutes of the Dark Knight. I didn't like the last hour of the Dark Knight. I feel like when things are less timely, it's actually better because you don't have that initial rush of like, I just saw it and now I'm really disappointed. But a lot of the feedback is about that. The episode that is most criticized, I think, is our Avengers episode where Andy Anatko basically went off about how he hated it. And this is a movie that is generally liked and did really well. And in fact, most of us liked, but Andy didn't like it. And I don't like that episode, not because Andy was critical, but because I felt like the episode became about us trying to but we were sparring with Andy and his arguments instead of it being like, well, Andy has this argument and Dan has this argument and John has this argument and Jason has this argument. Instead, it was sort of like all about Andy's argument. That's the part that I didn't like is that it took over the episode. I'm fine with conflict. I actually, one of the pieces of feedback we got that I thought was interesting from somebody who said, you guys seem to agree too much. And all I can say to that is I don't actually take a poll. We don't talk about what we think of a particular thing before we record. It's not planned. It's not, it's not in the tank for or against a particular movie.
Do you send out a, here's what I want to talk about next week. So to the 30, 20 odd, or whatever you said.
It's like a dozen, 15, something like that.
Pool, or how do you determine?
I send out an email that says, okay, can we talk about Star Trek Into Darkness? Here are some times. And I'll send out – I usually use doodle.com, and I send out a little link to doodle.com that's a grid of times, and you check the boxes of when you can make it. And I pick the most common time, and I say, all right, it's set. It's scheduled. We'll do it at this time. Occasionally we'll have conversations on the mailing list, but most of the time it's not about what we're talking about. It's about tangential stuff. Or about the previous episode. No, you mentioned this thing, and I found this thing. But we don't plan that stuff. So if we all agree, or if we all like something, or we all hate something, it's generally completely organic that it happens that way. Man of Steel, I actually had the feeling that people were going to hate it. It wasn't even that. I disliked it so much that I actually went out of the way to find somebody who I found two people who I thought were going to be very positive about it, and tried to get them on. And Andy Anatko couldn't do it because he was traveling. And Moises Chuyan came on, and in the end, I feel like he was more agreeable with what we were saying than I was kind of hoping, where he would be like, no, I like it for this. And I think we kind of convinced him to be on our side at the end of that. But I didn't know whether John or Dan or anybody else was going to say that they thought Man of Steel was good and that we would have had a little thing. That's just how it happened.
Yeah. It's funny. We keep coming back to that episode because I'm in agreement that it was a bad movie. But then also we were traveling with my family and my wife had, I think she'd fallen asleep and I started listening to it. And then it was playing when she woke up and she's like, this is the same show. They're still talking about Man of Steel an hour later. Yeah, no, they just pick one thing. That's what they do.
That's all we do for a whole hour.
We'll see if she listens
longer to
this show and then we'll, anyway. Well, I want to say thank you, obviously, to having me here, having me in these offices. Thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Happy to have you.
And so in wrapping up, I guess, where can folks find you, follow you, stalk you, all that stuff?
Sure. I post a lot of things on Twitter, so you can follow me on Twitter at Jay Snell. You can find The Incomparable. If you go to theincomparable.com, it'll have links to the 5x5 podcast and to our Goodreads group and to some other stuff that we have going on, or just go to 5x5.tv/incomparable. And you can also search for in iTunes for Clockwise, which is the Tech Hive podcast that I'm doing with Dan Morin now. Our attempt there to do something different is it's a half an hour long. We're not going to do a 2-minute or a 2-hour long tech podcast. It's a half an hour long once a week, 4 topics, 4 guests, 30 minutes. Or less, or your pizza is free.
Nice. Oh, and I forgot. See, this goes back
to Macworld.com and TechHive.com are fine places to get information about computers and such.
Yes, I can definitely attest. access to that. In being out of my surroundings, I forgot my the way I often end the shows is what podcast do you listen to?
Oh, yeah.
What apps do you listen to? Do you have time to
sure
cover those? I don't know how many sure you have, but we'll start with the podcast you listen to. What are some of your faves?
What are some of my faves? I feel like I should get out my iPhone and look. I'm currently using Downcast, although I've used a bunch of other ones over the ages, and I've got a bunch on here, but Downcast, for whatever reason, is just the one that is sticking for now. It's not great. I really wish that I could find a podcast app that would let me relatively easily build playlists, and most of them seem to want to either make you manually like add a playlist or an episode at a time, or they want to be smart playlists with no editing ability, and I kind of want to be able to yeah do something in between. So my favorite podcast right now is called The Flophouse. It's a podcast by – it's three guys in their – I'm going to say – I think they're all about 30. They're in Brooklyn, and two of them are writers for The Daily Show.
Oh.
And one of them is like a comedian, bartender guy, dude. And they watch a bad movie. Well, they watch a flop. They watch a movie that was either a critical failure or a box office failure or both. And then they immediately upon finishing watching the movie – they move to the microphones and then they talk about the movie, explain what it was in it, do lots of hilarious tangents. And essentially, they are so funny that it doesn't matter that the movie is terrible, and it usually is, because they are doing – these are very, very funny people saying ridiculous and funny things about movies and about all sorts of other random stuff that comes into their heads at any given time. And they know their movies, and the movies they watch are really bad. But and they've done like 130 episodes, and it's great. That is absolutely my favorite podcast. I also really like The Bugle, speaking of The Daily Show, which is John Oliver from The Daily Show and Andy Zaltzman, who's a British stand-up comedian and friend of his. So one of them's in London, one of them's in New York. That's a news satire. So it's sort of like The Daily Show, except way more swearing. Because you can do that on a podcast. those are the ones that are my absolute favorites. I don't want to take sides on the tech podcast thing. I listen to a lot of different tech podcasts. I listen to Unprofessional with Lex Friedman. Some I listen to.
That's because you're saying him because he pays your bills now.
That's true. I listen to select episodes of The Prompt and The Inadco Almanac and The New Disruptors. And Ad Hoc that Renee Ritchie does, I listen to that one sometimes. I listen to almost all of Accidental Tech Podcast. That's one. But I have so many queued up. You know, the talk show with John Gruber, I listen to select episodes of, and some of the other Mule stuff. There's a great Doctor Who podcast called The 2 Minute Time Lord that I like a lot. And there, again, like with Clockwise, one of the things I love about it is that it is more or less 2 minutes long. It's a short essay about a topic. So it's not what's the news and what are the fans talking about, but it's a guy who's a huge Doctor Who fan, and I love Doctor Who, huge Doctor Who fan, and he has a 2 minute sort of like take on some aspect of the show, and that's it. That's the whole thing, and I love that. I love mm-hmm. that it's not me listening to a bunch of people sit for 2 hours talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, I do already do a show like that. I don't need to listen to one. Yeah.
And that goes back to what I was saying, why I love the show that you do is because it is a little bit outside the box. And I think that's – if I can encourage anybody who's listening with this to not just try and do the here's the news, here's the thing, and follow the same patterns as much as we all do it and we all model ourselves after a period.
Right, and some shows are like that where it's very much like a rhythm of like we want you to listen every week and all of that. But not all of them have to be that way,
yeah.
I guess.
And I think that's what is unique and what The Incomparable shows is that you can build an audience about with something like that where it isn't guaranteed you have to listen every week. And
Right. Some of our iTunes reviews say, well, I don't listen every week. It's like, that's like fine.
I know. That's what's neat about podcasting.
We are very much not trying to have everybody listen every week because sometimes you'll be interested and sometimes you won't.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks, Jason. And I think this episode, I guess I'm used to streaming it live.
Sure.
So I'm used to talking to someone. So there's nobody listening. Doesn't matter.
Yes.
And
thanks, everybody out there not listening in podcast land.
You can find SSKTN, of course, at sskTN.com. On Twitter at SSKTN and Facebook.com/SSKTN. And I'm on Twitter at iChris. And I think in all that being said, thank you for listening and have a great day.